Well, that's the crazy sound of New Orleans, or Nollins, as they say. That's the Dirty Dozen Brass Band with something called Old School. This is Lead Stories. I'm Yatrice Lead. It's Monday, January the 7th, and President Obama has nominated former Senator Chuck Hagel as Secretary of Defense to succeed Leon Panetta. Hagel, a Republican from Nebraska, had served two terms in the Senate, but Republicans are leading the charge against him, saying he's not in line with their views on Israel in particular and Iran. Hagel's confirmation, therefore, is shaping up to be a tough fight. The president also nominated John Brennan, his chief counterterrorism advisor, to be the next director of the CIA. If confirmed, Brennan, an assistant to the president for counterterrorism and homeland security since 2009, will replace retired General David Petraeus, who, as you recall, was the CIA director, who quit last November amid revelations that he was having an extramarital affair with his biographer. And in Aurora, Colorado, prosecutors today began presenting evidence against accused mass shooter James Holmes in a preliminary hearing that will determine whether he will be brought to trial. Holmes, who has not yet entered a plea, has been charged with 166 counts of first-degree murder and attempted murder and possession of explosive devices. On July the 20th, Holmes allegedly entered a movie theater in Aurora, dressed in combat gear and armed with an assault rifle, a Glock pistol, a shotgun, and canisters of what was believed to be tear gas, and opened fire, killing 12 people and injuring more than 70 others. So that's a briefing on what's happening today, major things going on today. But I wanted to talk about some figures that came out last Friday. The Obama administration and top Democrats in Congress were pleased with the January 4th U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics report, showing an upward tick in employment and a slight dip in the national unemployment rate, holding now at 7.8%. It's yet another sign that Obama's economic strategies are working, they said. A boon for the middle class. Well, two things bother me here. What's this middle class? How are they defining middle class? I don't get it. Because it seems to me that they ought to be a little bit more specific about this middle class that they're talking about, because the president continues to refer to it, or the Democrats keep talking about it. And this new economic model that stresses the growth of the middle class that should be growing outward, the new economic model stresses outward growth for the middle class. And certainly, I would contend that this classification does not include the vast majority of people of color. And certainly, based on the numbers, when you take a look at the numbers, you see that Obama's staunchest supporters, the Democratic Party's staunchest supporters, are also the hardest hit by unemployment. The latest unemployment figures, which were released Friday, like I said, was says that non-farm payroll employment rose by 155,000, meaning 155,000 jobs were added. And as I said before, the unemployment rate remained an unchanged 7.8%. It was that figure in last month. A number of sectors continued to add jobs despite consumer pessimism, the report said. The health sector, the healthcare sector, is the largest provider of jobs, adding about 95,000 jobs in December, followed by food services and drinking places with 38,000. I can understand the drinking places because people are so depressed That's where they go. Construction added 30,000 jobs, manufacturing rose by 25,000 jobs, and so forth. But all of this is nice. The retail trade, for example, after increasing by 143,000 over the previous 3 months, remained steady at that number. Well, this is a quote from Alan B. Krueger, the White House chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers. He said, the employment report, quote, provides further evidence that the U.S. economy is continuing to heal from the wounds inflicted by the worst downturn since the Great Depression. It is critical that we continue the policies that are building an economy that works for the middle class as we dig our way out of the deep hole that was caused by the severe recession that began in December 2007. And then, of course, we had House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat from California, chiming in that the report should encourage Republican lawmakers to focus on the middle class and pass legislation promoting private sector jobs. Oh, this is very good. Except we are not clear, neither are they, as to who this middle class is. Who comprises the middle class in today's America? Could you tell me? They can't tell us, but they use it because it is an emotional appeal. The people who are working and making reasonable money consider themselves middle class for purely emotional reasons. Because they say, well, I can't be working class because the working class would be people who don't have as much education as I do. They don't live in stable neighborhoods like I do. They don't have the 2.2 kids and a dog named Spot like I do. So I am middle class and they're not. Nobody knows who's middle class. But it is a concept that keeps popping up by this administration. It's very annoying. At some point, some reporter should ask the president to strictly define who he's talking to and who he's talking about when he talks about this middle class. And if, in fact, there is a thing that he's able to define as the middle class, here's something I'm going to tell you. It won't contain that many people of color. The middle class he is talking about would probably be mostly white. Because we do know something about the black so-called middle class, defined the way sociologists defined middle class people. And that is, although they would be, let's say, they would be making less money than their white counterparts with the same education, but they would have, according to the sociologist that we've talked to right here on this program, Cohen, Professor Cohen was here talking about the black middle class. The close to 65% of African Americans described as middle class have zero assets. Now, if we're talking about wealth and whites, wealth is measured in terms of assets, what you own. And when they talk about blacks, they talk in terms of income, what you earn, a dichotomy, even in the application of the so-called economic formula. You have one that relates to whites and one that relates to blacks, even in the same so-called classification of middle class. I wish they would stop using that term because it is very annoying when they do use it. But here's something interesting behind those numbers. Nationwide, the unemployment rate for whites was 6.9%, up slightly from 6.8% in November. The unemployment rate for Latinos was 9.6%, down slightly from 9.9%. The unemployment rate for African Americans is 14.0%. Now, let's be real clear that these numbers reflect people who are actually working. They don't reflect people who are working seasonally, people who are not working at all, people who are just able to find catch-as-can jobs, or people who are so fed up that they have just given up looking for jobs. If you were to factor these groups in, the unemployment rate would be skyrocketing in the African-American community. And this is nothing new. The statistics of unemployment have been so lopsided, racially skewed in this country for a long, long time. But to ignore it again and to now say to the people, hey, you know, things are getting better, and they're getting better for the middle class. This president does not talk about the working class or the working poor or the poor. Those words just don't seem to come out of his mouth. Here's another set of statistics. The overall unemployment rate for 18 to 29-year-olds for December 2012 was 11.5%. The unemployment rate for 18 to 29-year-old African-Americans was 22.1%. The unemployment rate for 18 to 29-year-old Latinos was 12.2%. The unemployment rate for 18 to 29-year-old women was 10.4%. These are the core groups that delivered mightily for Barack Obama: African Americans, Latinos, women, and young people. So look at the incidence of unemployment as against the middle class. These groups that I just talked about are the core groups, the core constituent groups that voted for Barack Obama overwhelmingly in his re-election bid. Latinos voted for Obama 71%. African Americans voted for Obama 93% to 94%. And that is what we're looking at when they talk about these unemployment numbers, that people are so heartened by them, that it's such a positive thing to take a look at. You may be hearing some noise on my end. It is unavoidable, I'm afraid. But we'll just muddle through. So this is a really awful kind of political game being played. And it couldn't be at a worse time, because the numbers are deceptive and they are used to create a narrative that is meant to make the administration look good. But we still have the systemic problem of unemployment, especially among African Americans, where it is more than twice the rate of whites. And now, how could that possibly be ignored by a so-called progressive and liberal and left-of-center president? How is it that they don't even discuss this? And this is why the African-American leadership ought to get its act together. This president should not have any breathing room at all, not on this subject. The issue is jobs. I said it before. The issue is jobs. The number one issue is jobs. In the African-American community, unemployment is staggeringly high. Even at the numbers that I've quoted, they are still lower than the real numbers, because the real numbers should take into account all those categories of unemployed or marginally employed or seasonally employed or cyclically employed people, or people who've just given up looking for jobs. The unemployment rate in some African-American communities for teenagers, working-age teenagers, is way into the 70 and 80 percentile. They don't talk about that, but it's true. It is absolutely true. So when they come out with these numbers, you should ask two questions. Who are these middle-class people that you're talking about that are doing so much better now that the economy is beginning to move for them? And if your obsession is with the middle class, what program do you have for the working class, the working poor, and the poor? What about them? What shot do they have at employment? The president comes up short. He comes up short on this business of employment. And the African-American community ought to be breathing down his neck about this. Why? Because he's into his second term, which means for the first 4 years, we did not see any movement at all for African-Americans, especially because I'm referring to African-Americans because this particular grouping has been disproportionately affected historically by unemployment. The unemployment rate in the African-American community, according to the folks who study this thing out at Berkeley, have been an issue for 50 years at least. The disparity has been there for that long, at least five decades. This president coming in for the first term on the groundswell of support from the African-American community, you would think that something like this would be an issue, and he would be very much inclined to make a priority item. Of course, jobs for everybody, that's a priority item. But you can't tell me that it's okay. You can, you know, speak encouragingly about the economy and your economic strategies that are working when you have disparate evidence here that the African-American community is absolutely, you know, on the wrong end of the stick here. It is just outrageous. It is just outrageous. You know, it wasn't too long ago that some folks did a study. The Economic Policy Institute, in fact, did a study that showed that the unemployment rate, this was going back in 2010, just 2 years ago, the unemployment rate in Detroit for African Americans was 24.7%. Now, imagine, the United States is seen, people are seeing the economy as in crisis state with an unemployment rate of 7.9%, and people are screaming that this is intolerable. I mean, it's really, really bad at 7.9%. 24.7%. And in places like Milwaukee, Las Vegas, Minneapolis, Charlotte, Miami, Tampa, Las Vegas again, all these cities exhibited unemployment rates for African Americans in excess of 20%. Nobody's talking about it in the Obama administration because they don't want to be seen as, the president doesn't want to be seen as pandering to blacks. But this is the situation at ground level. This is a situation. So how they get away with this is beyond me, to continue to make the situation look far rosier than it actually is. It is beyond crisis point in the African-American community. It is actually in meltdown point right now. The African-American community in terms of employment is beyond crisis. And this administration doesn't seem to understand that. Whether you talk about the employment of adults or you're talking about the employment of young people, it is beyond crisis right now. It is actually in meltdown mode. In meltdown mode. Well, speaking of the fiscal cliff, the reports are now beginning to surface, and I told you, did I not say that neither the president nor Mr. Boehner at the time when they were negotiating, this is before the weepy Mr. Boehner walked out and threw his hands up in the air and said, I can't do anymore, forget about it. But I did tell you there was going to be a lot of pork. And there was. This monumental bill, which had been hanging around for 17 months with no activity, finally got, you know, ran through Congress. 154 pages made this bill up. 154 pages. And the lawmakers were able to have a whopping 6 minutes to read the bill before voting on it. This is, and the bill, by the way, they hadn't seen the bill before because the bill was actually put together behind closed doors in secret. The lawmakers, the people elected by the voters to transact business in Congress, were not privy to the contents of this bill before the vote. They had 6 minutes to read 154 pages and to cast their votes. This is democracy. And by some incredible miracle, because this is what happens typically in Congress, especially when bills are passed in the wee hours of the night or the morning, early morning, like it was for the fiscal cliff, all kinds of pork miraculously ends up in these bills, disguised as actual legislation. But imagine, the lawmakers themselves, this was not a transparent process. The lawmakers themselves were denied the opportunity to fully scrutinize this bill, to debate the bill, to object to whatever it is they found objectionable, and then to vote intelligently on this bill. It was, here it is, you have 6 minutes, and then we're going to conduct a vote. Which is why the Congressional Budget Office is now reporting that the bill that was passed actually spends more than $330 billion more than it would take in tax hikes. And much of that spending is for, or comes from, or is related to special interest groups. Amazing. More than 300, at a time when they're talking about saving money, you have to cut costs and you have to raise taxes, but we have to contain the deficit and we have to, you know, put together a balanced budget and we're in cost-saving mode. More than $330 billion miraculously ends up in the fiscal cliff legislation that was just passed, H.R. 8, the name of the bill, H.R. 8, House Resolution 8. And what were these things for? NASCAR got $43 million over 2 years. Because according to whoever it is that was able to persuade somebody to put that in, it will provide jobs. You know, race car drivers need jobs, and the people who attend to the racetrack will have jobs, and whoever else will have jobs. $43 million. $165 million a year, so that the railroads can maintain their tracks. $150 million for 2010 and 2011, so that Hollywood studios would be able to take advantage of their tax loopholes. Tax incentives for employees taking mine safety courses. Goldman Sachs gets subsidies to the tune of $1.6 billion in tax-free financing for its headquarters. Imagine that. This is Congress spending people's money, giving it away to these special interest groups precisely at a time that they're singing the song over and over again about how we have to pay attention to the bottom line. We've got to cut the budget. And this is the kind of obscenity that they do. Unbelievable. You should go online and take a look at it. $14.3 billion to subsidize research and development. You have something like $248 million for film production expenses. Anybody who makes a film in a so-called depressed community, that's what that amounts to. Subsidizing rum production, $222 million. Subsidizing rum production in Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. This is a kind of insanity. The kind of insanity that is going on, and this is people's money. Could you imagine that? So I think it's time for people to up the ante on this administration. Did Barack Obama know about these add-ons or these tax loopholes that were provided for in the fiscal cliff budget as he signed it? Who knew about all of this? Who knew that all this pork was in there? And I told you, you want to know where the money's going? It's got pork in it. I knew it even before they took the vote. I told you that. That's what you have to look for. And sure enough, it's right there. And I find it hard to believe that the president didn't know, or his people didn't know, or that the Democrats didn't know and the Republicans didn't know. They all knew. special interests get special treatment in the United States. And this is government. This is why a vote of no confidence should be taken. If we had those provisions, we seem not to have those provisions in our Constitution to literally just disband Congress and get a new one. Throw these bums out. This is legislative malpractice. This is legislative malfeasance. This is a conspiracy to commit crimes of bribery and whatnot. This is illegal. This is wrong. And it is also over. They're saying, well, it's past tense. Now let's move on. We have another fight coming up soon. Let's move on. You know, these are just small matters. The Congressional Budget Office is saying, you guys have put more than $330 billion more in on the spending and of your the bill you just passed, which nobody saw except a few people who contrived it and put it together and hurriedly got it through in the wee hours of the morning, giving lawmakers 6 minutes to read 154 pages. And this is democracy. We'll take a break and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. The Dirty Dozen Brass Band is at it again. This is Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. And yes, I forgot to mention the bank of all banks, the Bank of America, yet another fine of $10 billion settling with Fannie Mae over these awful mortgages that it palmed off on the federal government, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And, of course, they're not just only Bank of America, but you have 10 major lenders, including J.P. Morgan Chase and Citibank, the big banks. These guys are getting away with murder. They only pay a fine, and all is well. Nobody's losing their bank charters, or nobody is under any criminal indictments. Nobody's going to jail. They fine them $10 billion, and it's all right. You know, we kiss and make up, and naughty, 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 don't do it again. And that's it. That's the Obama administration's response to some of the biggest banking scandals in the United States history. Just pay the fine, and all will be well. Hello, you're on the air, David, of New Rochelle.
Hi there. Let me get a speaker. Hello.
Hello.
I got David Combs here. You know me from long ago.
Thank you.
I want your opinion on something. An answer yes or no. If Obama were white and a Republican and signed the exact same bills and gave the exact same bailouts, everything was identical to what he's done so far in the last 4.5 or whatever it is years, would the Republicans be happy as they were with Bush, or happier, actually much happier?
I think that's the answer. My laughing is the answer. The answer is they would not have a problem. But
well,
they don't
Obama.
Actually, here's a joke. I mean, they really don't seem to have a problem. As I said, when Boehner and Obama sat down in that room to do business, and then later Mitch McConnell and Nancy Pelosi and whoever else might have gone into that room and secluded themselves away from the rest of Congress. Basically, they were all on the same page.
I mean, the trillion dollars he gave to the banks, all this stuff, they would be happy. So what is Obama? He may be in a sheep's clothes, but what is he?
He is out of the Democratic Leadership Council, which is that grouping of conservative Democrats within the Democratic Party.
I think he's worse than that.
Well, at the very least, that's what he is.
I think he's a Republican.
You know, to be very honest, I don't think that even Republicans or Democrats, for that matter, actually know what their ideology stands for, what their ideology is.
I don't think they understand. One more thing. I think we will, after all this is over, he will be voted the worst president we have ever, ever had.
Well, I think it's time for people to make their voices heard very loudly, especially that grouping that is being hurt so badly. I mean, people, working people, are really being screwed. And I said it. This is, just watch out. It's happening.
But they can't. He's a Democrat. They can't do anything. They can't say anything.
Well, we have to be prepared. If we say nothing, be prepared for the consequences, because they're coming.
Yep.
You know, this thing about, well, we raised the taxes for the rich, I already explained. The taxes are raised for everybody. For the working people, your taxes automatically are going up by $2,000. Well, they're not saying that, but that's what is happening. Now, they're giving you the carrot by saying, well, you know, you may have a little, you know, bit more to pay, but look, we went after the rich people, and we're getting them. They're going to pay a heck of a lot more than you will. So, you know, be comforted by that. But the fact is, $2,000 is $2,000 to working people. That's huge. And that went through.
Because the stock they own in the health companies is going to bring them a whole lot more money.
That's right. They are well taken care of, because, as I said, in Congress we have a very healthy representation of multimillionaires in Congress. So it's just a club. It has become a club.
And thanks to the Supreme Court about the money and all that.
Oh, Lord, it's so frustrating. I think, you know, people just have to start organizing and get down to D.C. because this is outrageous. And it's happening. They're so contemptuous now. It's in your face. You know, they're doing it. They don't care. Like a bunch of gangsters. You know, we have the power. We could do what we want. And the hell with you. You know, we have the power. You can't do anything anyway, because we are protected. We are in Congress. We're doing the people's business. We're making political decisions to the best of our ability. And you know that that's a bunch of malarkey, you know? But this is what is happening in our face. They're throwing it at you and saying, I dare you to do something about it. And we have no way of just insisting on a no-confidence vote and throwing these guys out. We have no way of, there's nothing to accommodate that. And I think it's time that some enterprising law group ought to look at the way to write an amendment to the Constitution so that Congress could be disbanded, because people are absolutely fed up about this Congress. Thank you so much, David, for your call. John from Staten Island, you're on.
Happy New Year to you, Mr. Patrice. This is definitely a lead story. You know, your dissertation, what you're postulating about the indictment of the democracy as it's being dispensed in this country, the social reality is correct. The lobbyists, the contributors to the presidential campaign, those who are going to be rewarded with an ambassadorship, you know, it's a sinking ship. You're correct. The system is corrupt. It's not working. And what is the true social reality of the concrete corporate overstanding of this situation is that the masses, the asses of the masses, have to get out in the street and protest this, because this is, if you are the so-called leader of the free world, look what Hugo Chavez was able to do in Venezuela. He brought real reform. He brought real revolution. Am I guilty of voting for President Obama? Yes. But blindfolds are coming off. Thank God that we have people like you with these lead stories. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, thank you, John. you know, it's so hard because people are being bombarded just simply getting through life from day to day. It is a very hard struggle. And it is appalling that we have a government that deliberately misleads people, deliberately takes advantage of a situation, deliberately surrenders the apparatus of government and the fortunes of the people. These are tax dollars that they're giving away and doing whatever they want to do with it. You know, just this past week, we had an example in France. Gérard Depardieu and Brigitte Bardot, two famous actors, decided they're going to get out of France. They're going to go to Russia or any other place but France, because the French government had become so larcenous and insane that they just could not understand how they could live there anymore. They felt insulted as citizens. They were actually being, in their view, they were actually being fleeced. Yes, they made a lot of money, but they also paid a lot of money in taxes. But the French government decided that it would raise taxes to a 75%. Now, come on. Come on now. You can take 75% of somebody's taxes and think that that's okay. And I know we have some feelings about the rich, but there are people who make money the good old-fashioned way. They work hard and they make their money. A government decides, it wakes up and decides, well, we'll take 75% of yours. This is the same thing that's going on here. The madness. You have a bill. For 3 years, this Congress did nothing. Absolutely nothing. No legislation was passed really for 3 years. No budget. Now we have a big rush to the finish line. This particular piece of legislation should have been dealt with more than 17 months ago. They dilly-dally and they do all that kind of stuff. But in the meantime, Barack Obama is inviting the corporate leaders to come down and inviting the civil rights people and inviting the unions and inviting this and that and the other. It's a nice show for people to inform him of what is fair, what their concerns are, what is right. Okay, great. So you got information from the broadest spectrum of America. But somehow, you are able to put in $330 billion worth of pork. And it flies through Congress in the wee hours of the morning, and you hold a news conference the next day talking about, well, you know, pretty much we did it. It was a tough fight, but, you know, it's done. And I've signed it with my auto pen while I'm in Hawaii vacationing. That's $330 billion that could have gone to generating jobs for the very people who put you in office. $330 billion could do a lot to revive the economy of many small towns, entire towns. But you have no problem giving it to Goldman Sachs and NASCAR and Hollywood, and whoever else you know your pals are. And these politicians are doing this thing out in the open. Now, they're not even disguising it anymore. They have such contempt for the people who are looking for responsible leadership. This is a crime. This is a crime. And people ought to rise up about it. This is a crime. And more of it is coming in the next, you know, waves of legislation around budgets. And now that the Congressional Budget Office has actually spelled out in detail where the pork is, There's no reaction from Congress to say, hey, we ought to recall this thing and revise this legislation. This is wrong. The legislators who are saying we didn't vote for this are not now saying, hey, let's recall this bill and excise all of this pork. They're terrified to confront the majority leader. They're terrified to engage in legislation fights. Because it's now of Democrat versus Republican. And in fact, the Democrats and the Republicans are gangsters in this whole debacle of putting in more than $330 billion of pork. And this is in just one bill that they got this thing out thinking nobody would know. Well, my friends, I think we have to get really, really vociferous. We have to find a way to make our sentiments known, and we will do that. We will find a way to do that because this is unacceptable. This is wrong. This is, to use a very popular phrase, this is un-American. This is unpatriotic. This is the kind of stuff that they say happens in all these crooked countries, these despotic leaders and the crooked countries where they do anything they want to do. We put an end to it. We should put an end to it. Well, thank you. That music says that our time is up. We'll meet each other again tomorrow here at 1 o'clock. Tell a friend. Bring them along. And tell them this is some good things happening here on PRN.FM. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. And you can reach me at leidstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you're thinking. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.